Welcome back to Casting the Net, where we seek to untangle the wide net that public health casts on our community and how it affects people just like you. Today, we have the pleasure of speaking on a local resource that many of you may not have heard of. The Center for Healthy Living is a local resource here in Tyler, available to all East Texas residents. It was established in 2013. It is staffed by community health workers and offers a wide variety of free resources. Today, we're sitting down with Joy Johnson. She's a Master Certified Health Education Specialist, and she actually oversees and is Assistant Director of Community Wellness as well as the Center for Healthy Living here in Tyler. So, Joy, welcome to Casting the Net.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Yeah.
So, tell us a little bit about your role at the center.
Yeah, sure.
Or so, let's reel that back. Let's say, define what the center is.
Yeah, we should start with that.
Yeah.
So, like you said, it is a free resource. We do a variety of different services that includes navigating individuals to resources here in Tyler. This area has a lot of resources, but it is not often easy to find. So our community health workers are especially trained to navigate people to various resources, like if people need help with their mortgage or their rent or their light bill. And so not only do they navigate, but they also advocate for them. So they make sure that they were able to get somebody to help them. And we also navigate to free breast cancer screening for women who are uninsured. We can help them get a mammogram, you know, for free. And that is invaluable. And not only that, but our services go all the way to a cancer diagnosis. So it's not like, okay, here's your free mammogram. Good luck.
Yeah.
You know, we actually follow these women throughout their whole experience.
Yeah.
And we also teach classes there. We teach a diabetes self-management class and we teach diabetes prevention, which is more focused on managing chronic disease and losing weight and increasing physical activity. So it's a well-rounded program.
Okay.
So that term chronic disease may not be interpreted or defined as well as it probably could be, because there are many different health situations that can be defined as having chronic disease. So the ready examples would be somebody with high blood pressure, high cholesterol, the situation you may go to your doctor to get a wellness exam, your annual wellness exam.
Mm-hmm.
Then that kind of leads to another situation.
An offshoot.
Well, how often do people actually go to their annual wellness exam? It's kind of, when we're doing community events, it's almost the situation where, well, when's the last time you've had a wellness exam?
Right.
That's the type of a solution that we provide at the Center for Healthy Living. So
that's very true, because my mom recently got Medicare. I like to use examples.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, I like to use my mom as an example.
I know, right? Little did she know. But so, you know, when you get Medicare, you have their little like physical, what is it called, wellness visit. So, you know, I thought she'd be excited. You get to go to the doctor now. Wow, you have insurance. And she kept on like, why do I have to go? I don't understand. Even when she was in the waiting room, she's like, why am I even here? I'm like,
out loud for everyone.
Well, she was texting.
She was texting me.
Like, why am I here?
Just openly talking to everybody that's here. What am I doing here?
Yeah. And it's like, you're there so that you can get checked out.
Yeah.
So that you can prevent things from happening.
Sure.
So I think a lot of people feel like, oh, I'm feeling well enough. I don't need to go to the doctor.
Sure.
Or if I go to the doctor, they're going to find things and it's going to escalate from there. So there can be like a fear-based reason why.
Yeah.
We've had this topic in an earlier podcast where, as a health department, the product that we are selling to the community, just overall wellness, just health, it's not an easy product to sell.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to convince the average person the cost benefit of keeping yourself healthy, because on average, it doesn't really arise to a person's mind until something goes wrong.
Right, I was going to say.
And then, oh, hey, give health me a department. Solution. Yeah, then let me talk fix. To you. Let me holler at you. How
and
can you help me?
And that's where a lot of funding and money, you know, we say it's not easy to sell. It's easy to sell, I would say, if you have kind of more snake oil type solutions, you know, if you're not providing accurate information to address whatever issue, you know, you are. But I guess public health in the sense of providing good resources to address those issues is a little harder to sell, because if you're like, hey, you need to exercise, because exercise is seen to be, studies have shown that, you know, exercise is pretty high on the list, but they're like, nah, I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. What else you got?
Boring.
Well, what's next? Yeah, what's next on the list?
It's boring, you know, eat healthy, exercise.
Yeah.
What? Yeah.
Yeah.
What else? Especially when you have, and I don't want to go too far down another rabbit hole, when you have other drugs like Ozempic and Mounjaro and other things that seem to have these incredible results. And it's like, okay, I can lose 40 pounds in like 3-4 months without exercising. You know, and so it's hard to compete with that. But I think we just have to adapt ourselves to our changing environment, be able to change our messaging.
And also to be like, is that sustainable?
It is not.
You know, sustainability, you know, changing habits as opposed to like these Band-Aid kind of fixes. That it's like,
exactly.
Okay, you hop off this medication, then what? You know, and it's like, is it coming back? You know? Yeah, so having solutions that are long term and not just, as we're saying, kind of like a quick fix, you know,
so,
fast turnaround time.
Joy, let's tumble down one rabbit hole based on what we've just discussed over the last couple of minutes, because there's a recurring education session that we provide to the public. That we have one in the fall, we have one in the spring, where this is open to anybody that lives in East Texas. If you're able to travel to the Center for Healthy Living, which is located at 2815 Frankston Highway in Tyler, even though we've been open 11 years now?
11 years 11 in October. Years,
starting from October. Mm-hmm. We still have individuals that, I don't know where the center, where is that?
Yeah.
And then it's the old fire station building on Frankston Highway in Tyler. I drive by there all the time. I've never stopped to see what's in there. Like we have many examples of statements like that where people know where the building is, but they don't know what's in the facility, like what we provide, all the free assistance that we can give to help you stay healthy. Our job is to keep you away from an actual medical emergency. That is one of our basic roles, not just the three of us here in this podcast session, not just our community wellness department, but us as the local health department. We're working to protect the health of as many people as possible to keep you from having to go to an ER visit or having a drastic medical surgery procedure because of some preventable health conditions that could have been avoided or reversed by coming to one of our free diabetes self-management classes.
Just to reiterate, NetHealth's mission statement is to prevent, promote, and protect.
That product placement right there. I'm talking about Thomas.
So, yeah, preventing, promoting, and protecting. That's what we're in the business of doing. And that comes in a multitude of different ways.
But,
preventative, you know, as opposed to reactive. You know, kind of like, oh, I got a problem. I got to throw something to fix it. You know, it's like, I guess, what do they say that going before the, like if there's like a river and there's to prevent something downstream, you know, you go upstream.
Mm-hmm. And, to find the source of the problem.
You know, address it before, you get a little bit too far down that path.
So statistically, we, as in East Texas, statistically, we lead the nation in the onset of preventable health conditions. So I'm going to first focus on type 2 diabetes, because on average, one out of eight people that live in East Texas have type 2 diabetes. So for everybody's listening, just think of eight people. Whether it's eight people in your family, eight of your closest friends, eight people in your office, eight people in your company. On average, one of those eight people is living with type 2 diabetes. So that's one situation to consider. A second situation to consider, that one person out of your that eight in that group, that person may not be effectively managing their type 2 diabetes. So their situations may get worse because they may not have been educated of how they may need to adjust their daily, weekly, monthly lifestyle habits to reverse that trend of having type 2 diabetes. And that kind of goes back to what we were saying earlier, where medication doesn't always have to be the solution. That's where our diabetes education sessions come in, that we have those. It's a six-week session.
Yeah, between 5 to 6 weeks, yeah.
And it's led by a certified diabetes educator.
Right.
Can we shout out her name?
Yeah, Tasha Sells.
Mm-hmm. And we've been working with Tasha for a long, I don't know how many years.
Five or six years. She's amazing. She's a registered nurse, and she has a lot of experience. And that's for this area, and then we have another one in Wood County area that we partner with.
So the sessions cover a wide variety of topics. So there's stress management. Mm-hmm. There's dietary selection. There's physical activity. I'm trying to remember. There's one on financial, not money management, what I'm thinking of. Maybe it's medication management.
Medication, which that one is really helpful. We have everyone bring their medications because it's hard to keep up with all these meds. And so having a nurse be able to give you that time to, you know, this is what this is and what's the difference between insulin and other pill medications. Or, you know, a lot of times people take something they don't even know what it's for. I worked for a doctor who wouldn't necessarily tell every patient what they had. So they find out, like, wait, I have high blood pressure. And so it's really good to know what you're taking and make sure that you're taking it correctly.
And you're not just taking a pill just because your doctor told you you need to take this pill.
Or what happens if you don't take it?
If you don't take it.
A lot of people just don't take it because they don't feel good on it or they have side effects and they stop taking it. But they don't communicate that to their provider. And just know that, you know, your provider has, there are a ton of other medications that can be tried. Just because you tried one doesn't mean that, you know, you're going to have the same experience with another. So if we go over that a lot. Mm-hmm. We also talk about, you know, just the basics. What even is diabetes? I mean, we hear about it a lot. We all know diabetes and it's, you know, high blood sugar. But what is it really and how does it affect every part of our body? So that's the first class. And our classes are very interactive. It's not just one person talking for like an hour or two. That gets old. But it's more of like, you know, hands-on models to use and to show how it actually affects the body. And people who have gone through the classes they're really amazed and so thankful that this resource is here. But kind of going back to what you were talking about, that it's a hard sell, is because it requires commitment.
And time.
Yeah. I mean, you have to set time to come to the class, an hour. And then you have to set time to work on the goals that you identified that you want to work on. And that's really tough.
Especially when we live in an era that we do now, where we have everything on our fingertips, immediate gratification. It's like, if I want something, I can order it. If I want to watch something, I can watch it. If I want this food delivered to me, I can do it. And we're in an era where it's like people it's like I want the solution and I want it now and I want it to take effect now. So it's like for somebody selling you something that it's like it can have this effect on you like this or it can affect that in your life in an instant, people are going to gravitate towards that as opposed to putting in some work.
Right.
Know?
Yeah. We like to say, you know, you didn't get here overnight.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not going to be a quick fix.
Yeah.
Not to say you can't use certain things, sure. but, it, you know, in the end, being healthy really is boring. I mean, you know, it's making the consistent choices over time.
Mm-hmm.
Day in and day out, it's consistency. I mean, how do people, when they're bodybuilding, and I don't have a lot of experience in that, but mm-hmm. they go to the gym every day. They eat certain foods that may not be that great, but they have a goal in mind. And they do it day in and day out. And they're the ones who see results. And so, yeah, you know, it's like, how'd you lose the weight? Oh, diet and exercise. Oh, wow. You know, people are waiting to hear like, oh, you know, I got some moon chunks and I crushed yeah. that yeah, up. Yeah,
you buy these specific
some
items
kind of crazy
at this store.
Yeah.
And I see what you're saying.
And I guess also like shifting, you know, have a certain relationship that you also have with like food and what you're ingesting. Is like first and foremost being like, this is something, like this is nourishment as opposed to this is, not to say that food can't be enjoyed, sure, but that's not the first and that shouldn't be the first and foremost why you consume food is like because of, you know, ultimately the taste and everything like that. It's like, this is supposed to be nourishment for your body for it to work. Like this mm-hmm. is energy. And most bodybuilders and things, people that, you know, practice hypertrophy training, when you hear them speak about food, it sounds almost kind of like, not that they have like a disdain or a hate for food, but some of them, you know, they're taking in like massive amounts of calories yeah. a day to grow that muscle. But they're almost kind of just like, if I look at it from the perspective of I want to enjoy this, it's just like I'm never going to be able to eat this much. I have to look at it from the perspective of this is doing something for me. Not in the sense of just for enjoyment, but a lot of people see food as just like kind of like this enjoyment and they forget about the aspect of like, no, this is actually supposed to do something for your body.
Yeah. It's like those cooking shows where they, do you eat to live or do you live to eat?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. I was going to say yeah. what you eat can either help you or it can hurt you. Yeah. And, you know, not to say you can't have times where you truly enjoy
Indulge.
Something. Mm-hmm. And that's what we teach in the class. I mean, if you have that, enjoy it. By mm-hmm. all means, do not try to deny, you know, because we all have cravings. And the more we deny it, the more it comes. But mm-hmm. to have to really savor it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I read something where we only taste like the first three bites. And then after that, it's just,
yeah.
you know, you're eating because you want to finish the plate. You want mm-hmm. a happy plate.
Mm-hmm.
But again, going back to what you said, if we look at food as fuel,
mm-hmm.
as investing in our health overall, that's really the shift that we need to see long-term changes. Yeah. That's hard to do, but mm-hmm. it is possible. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then going back to that bodybuilder hypertrophy analogy, there's one local gym owner here in the Tyler area. His name is Kelly Hitchcock. Shout out, Kelly. Remember,
shout out, Kelly.
It's a Fit City Tyler program that he was involved with. And I remember his phrase, whether this may have been made up by somebody else, but it has stuck in my mind because of Kelly Hitchcock saying it, is that you can't outwork your mouth. So no matter how much
mm-hmm.
exercise you try to do to think that you're going to overcompensate or maybe undercompensate by the dietary choices that you make.
To be in a caloric deficit. Yeah.
That you still have to eat high quality, nutritious food, regardless of how many hours in the gym
you
spend per day, per week, yeah. per month, per year.
That's what they say. Like 80% of, you know, is fought in the kitchen, you know, as opposed to in the weight room.
And that applies to whether you're a bodybuilder, whether you're a football, whether you're an athlete,
runner, yeah, all that.
The biggest anti crumble. Is crumble the one with the big old cookies? The biggest anti-crumble campaign I saw is with this guy, I think it was a TikTok, and he would run the equivalent of how many calories it take to burn off that one cookie.
Huh.
I've never been back to crumble since I saw that. Not that I went all the time anyway, but even as a splurge.
It's like a half marathon?
I mean, I think he ran 10 miles for one cookie. It's like when you put it into that perspective, it's like, no, thank you.
So, yeah. Well, I'm not going, was it that good of a cookie?
Exactly. I don't know.
Sometimes.
I don't know.
Or if it's a cheat meal day, you know, how some athletes, you have your cheat day or one cheat meal per week. Yeah, I can't do that, y'all. I guess I cheat every day. But we digress. Let's get out of that rabbit hole. Let's go to another one. Our cancer navigation services that we provide at the Center for Healthy Living. So we had touched on this a little bit earlier that we were based in Tyler, but our services are open to any East Texas individual. And dare I say, our major program, our largest program, our most enduring program.
Our oldest program.
Our oldest program. Mm-hmm. Is the acronym that we use is BCCS. So that's it's Breast and Cervical Cancer Services Program. If you are a woman that does not have health insurance, and or if you're a man who has a woman in your family that you know that doesn't have health insurance, have them give us a call at 903-593-7474. Or you can go through our website, mynethealth.org. Look us up for the Center for Healthy Living. We can help that uninsured woman receive access to a mammogram for free.
How much does a mammogram or a pap smear typically cost?
A lot less than getting breast cancer. That's the blanket answer, but it varies.
But for a screening, it's about maybe 200.
Yeah,
150 to 200. But if you have to go back for an ultrasound or, you know, some women have dense breasts, you got to go back. It only goes up from there.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're doing diagnostic, it's anywhere from 500 to 1,000.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Rack up pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anything more than zero. I mean, it's like, yeah, it's something. Yeah.
So offhand, Joy, just a guesstimate number. How many clients per year contact our community health workers about getting a mammogram? Just a ballpark number.
Contacting, I'm not sure, but as far as actual number helped, it would be between 500 to 600 a year. Now, some of those could be duplicate because you get approved for the program and then you can have it for up to a year. And then you can get approved every year as long as income qualifications are met. As far as contact, I don't know. But most of the time, so if they're contacting us, they're the getting a service.
Yeah. Have been helped. Have been enrolled for a mammogram, I guess would be a better
So between better 500 term. To 600 a year for over 12 years.
Then how many repeat customers, just a guesstimate, like what percentage of that?
I would say a good 30, 40% maybe.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So on my mom's side of my family, my great aunt had breast cancer when I was in high school, and she passed from breast cancer the year after I graduated high school. And our family dynamic had evolved over the years because she was essentially the glue of our family, and we have an older cousin to me, not that she's old. If you met her, she has more energy than a five-year-old. My current older cousin has become that glue of the family. But the point I'm getting at, a lady having breast cancer, going through the spectrum of diagnosis to treatment to chemotherapy to recovery, remission. And then my great aunt, she had developed breast cancer again. And that second time that she remembered all that she went through the first time and didn't want to go through all that the second time. But if I would have known then, back in the mid-90s, what I know now, I would have had a different conversation with her. So I bring all that up now. whoever is listening, think of the women in your family that maybe have never had a breast exam. They are the clients that we want to get enrolled to get that early screening, that early detection. If it's been a woman that hasn't had a mammogram in over a year, those are the women that we want to get contacted to the Center for Healthy Living. It all goes back to the earlier, even if a woman has stage one, the earlier she can be diagnosed at stage one, her health outcomes are tremendously better as opposed to putting it off. Like you mentioned earlier, Joy, yeah, I feel okay. I'm not going to worry about getting a mammogram right now. I'll do it next month, or I'll do it next year. And then next year becomes 2 years, and then becomes 5 years. And then she feels something that she normally doesn't feel doing a self-exam.
Would you say the women that come to the Center, Joy, are most of them like referrals, or are these women who have maybe had a scare, or they were like, I guess in what state of mind are a lot of the women that come up to the center? Are they, yeah.
Yeah, most of them are referrals. I would say probably like 60 or 70% maybe. Okay. And about half and half. Some, you know, they just want a regular screening. Okay. And then the others, yeah, their doctor has identified an issue or they have. And so at that point, then they need a diagnostic. Yeah. But I will say, some people put off a mammogram because they feel like it's going to hurt. They've got to take time off to do it. They've got to, you know, it requires an investment.
Or fear of results, maybe?
Fear of results, right. Or just the whole procedure, or just the hospital itself. You know, it's not pleasant going to a clinic. But once you're there, it's very in and out. I mean, I can speak from experience. I had two, and it's not like I was jumping for joy at the thought of getting one, but it's quick, it's easy, you're done, you don't have to worry about it. If it's normal, cross that off your list and move on with your life. It took me longer to actually make the appointment than to actually get it. But then the unique thing about having community health workers is that if something does come back abnormal, one, you have the funding. So take that hesitancy off the table. You know, you don't have to worry about funding. And then the other thing is they are very trained in coaching you through the fear of the results, or even telling you what to expect. You know, here's what you do. And they even go as far as to make the appointment for the individual. And so I think having someone that can help navigate or even translate. Two of our community health workers are bilingual, and that is tremendous. You have that language barrier, and that's a significant barrier to care.
For sure.
And it's free, right?
It's free.
It's free. It's free.
Well, it's almost like it sounds too good to be. Is there a catch? Like a no?
Well, No, but you do. There are qualifications. You know, you do have to meet income eligibility, but we do our best to try to make sure that, you know, you get some type of help. Mm-hmm. Even if we may not be able to help because of income, you know, we work with the hospital, try to get you a discount. So there's a lot of things we can do.
And I guess I wanted to go back to, like, the prevalence of the need of a location in a facility like the Center for Healthy Living. Based on the 1 in 8... You know, by that number, facilities like this need to exist and need to be utilized because there's obviously a need. Like, there is a problem with diabetes, and rates of cancer aren't going down anytime soon. And breast cancer, you know, specifically. So it's like a resource like the Center for Healthy Living is definitely a resource that needs to continue to exist in a, you know.
Yeah, and our, you know, we should be full. We should
right.
be.
Right. That's another thing. It's like people should be right. busting down the door for this free resource.
Yeah.
And in some instances, maybe if they're not, it's just a testament that it's not necessarily that people don't know that resources exist, you know, or, you know, there are multiple barriers that we find to be issues why maybe people don't reach out to get care. But yeah, statistically, people should be in these facilities. What have you found approach wise to get people to come to the center over the course of your tenure with NetHealth? How do y'all seek to reach people in the community to get them to this resource?
So that is a million-dollar question. And yeah. it's a question we pretty much talk about weekly, if not daily. You know, so I have, in my time there, we do a lot of outreach. Mm-hmm. We go to a lot of health fairs, a lot of, like, employee wellness places. We've even gone to a family reunion. That one was fun. So someone like me who's, you know, concerned about her family health and wanted to have someone out there to talk about diabetes because they had such a high prevalence of diabetes in their family. Mm-hmm. So this person took the initiative and we're like, why not? We've never done this. So here we go with our screening because we do free glucose screenings and they were eating their barbecue and we were I was doing my speech, but you know, it was really cool. We had a really great turnout and they loved it. But you know, we try to go where we know that people are, because we don't expect people to just come to us.
Yeah.
And so we've set up at bus stops and people are waiting for the next bus. So we were like, hey, would you like a free blood pressure screening? We've done that. We've gone to grocery stores, laundromats. And I'm trying to think of where else, but pretty much if it's safe, we'll go.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Mm-hmm. And doing things like this or going to the radio just to try to let people know that we exist and that we're here to help and it's free. I think that where we need to increase would probably be the provider level because providers see people and, you know, they're the ones who are, especially primary care providers, they're the ones who's going to predominantly catch the disease and then to be the first to treat it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember what the stats are, but I know it's very, I think it's like less than 50% of people that have been diagnosed have actually got formal education. And that's only the ones with insurance. That's not including uninsured.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you think about that, half of the people don't know. And so provider referrals are, well, they're powerful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've seen more people come because their doctor recommended than if they were to just come on their own.
Yeah.
And then the second tie would be if their wife is forcing them to go.
Yeah.
Or we've had wives come on behalf of their husbands, which is fine because they're the ones who do most of the cooking and planning. So, you know, we'll take it. But I think it goes back to what we were talking about with medication.
Mm-hmm.
Having worked in healthcare prior to converting to public health, I saw firsthand that we have a really great healthcare system that's great at treating problems, but not getting to the bottom of it.
Mm-hmm.
And when people get on medication, they think, oh, okay, now I don't have to worry about it.
They're treating symptoms.
Yes, they're treating the symptoms. And so now they don't have to worry about it. They can go ahead and have that chocolate cake, you know, because they're on insulin or they're on diabetes medication. Except that inevitably, what happens?
Yeah, they're not getting to the root of the issue.
No, and then it has to be increased.
Yeah.
And then pretty soon you're looking at wounds that won't heal.
Coming for toes and
yes. Fingers. All of a sudden you don't have feeling in your toes and your hands. Oh, nobody told me this would happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think a lot of it is, you know, going back to an investment.
Mm-hmm.
We're not saying don't get on medication.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, we want you to a certain extent, but we also want you to be able to manage it through diet and exercise.
Yeah, those resources that are readily available to you, regardless of financial situation, kind of. I think exercise is a big one. You know, it doesn't necessarily cost you dollars to stand up off the couch and walk in place for a little bit, you know, or to walk around the block, you know. But the power of a testimony. I'm a big advocate for the power of somebody's testimony, you know, people who've walked through it. I know we did some interviews this past year. We had your parents come by.
Yeah, my dad really went through the program, and he went through the program before he even had diabetes. As a matter of fact, he wasn't even diagnosed with pre-diabetes. You know, so you taught, you said 1 in 8 have diabetes, but there are way more people that have pre-diabetes and either don't know it or they know, but there's nothing being done about it. Mm-hmm. And so he didn't even have pre-diabetes. He just came to the class, and my mom came with him, and years down the line, he was diagnosed with it. So, and he took a lot of the information that we taught at that class and applied it to his situation. And of course, he has a free resource with me.
Yeah. Got the hookup. Got the family hookup.
He has the educator. But what were you saying?
No, it was just the power of a testimony.
Oh, yeah. So Willie Campbell, before he passed, was one of our biggest advocates for the class. So in case no one knows, he was Earl Campbell's brother. And he went through the program when the center first opened. I think he might have been one of the first clients to go through the program. Mm-hmm. And he loved it so much, he became an advocate. He had lost a leg to diabetes.
Wow.
And so every class, we would have him come and speak. And just to hear that person's perspective, it's one thing for me to stand up and say all this, but for someone who has walked through it and can look back and say, this is what I wish I would have done. Mm-hmm. I would have saved my leg. And so that was awesome. Yeah. And we're always looking for people to be able to advocate for us out in the community. That's the ultimate plan, right?
Yeah.
It's to have people out there spreading the word.
And I think that's a good point, too.
That kind of how it worked out, having some of these diabetes sessions in other cities, like you'd mentioned. There was one session a few summers ago in Kilgore, because I remember we had a few of our NetHealth coworkers from other departments that were present at that one. And then diabetes knows no income guidelines, because I remember there was a person that had been to one of the sessions at the Center for Healthy Living, which is a mouthful to say. So everybody, sometimes we just say the center instead of saying the full Center for Healthy Living. But then my East Texas drawl says center.
Center. We don't
not center. Yeah, we don't emphasize a T in center. So there was a client who came to one of the classes at the center who is a resident in Hideaway Lake. So long story short, y'all had a series of the classes hosted in the Recreation Center. Is that the name of it? I've never physically been in the Hideaway Lake. I haven't been past the guard gate. I know where it is, but
They had – it was kind of like their community center where they could have parties and meetings and whatnot.
But so, she became an ambassador.
She did.
Of her experience – in the education sessions at the center, and wanted those sessions to be provided to her community, to people that she knew, mm-hmm. her neighbors that had type 2 diabetes that needed access to that education, to that information. So it's, was it reach one, teach one? What the old phrase from...
Well,
both of y'all are giving me blank looks.
We taught 20. That class was 20 people.
reach 20. Teach.
And, you know, a lot of them, I'll still communicate with them, and they are like, we're still doing it. We're still walking. You know, we had one person who their goal for that week, because every week you set a goal, and it's a realistic goal. So their goal was to be able to walk to their mailbox every day. And they did that, and then they thought, oh, well, let me just walk down the road a little bit, and pretty soon they're walking all over Hideaway, and they still do, because they have expressed that they're still doing the habits. So, you know, it's baby steps, too. I love it when people advocate, and they are, gatekeepers of their community, mm-hmm. and they keep people in check. They really do.
They become the police.
Yeah.
For those that they're recruiting.
Or just checking in on it. And I love that because essentially that's what we want. We want to be able to do such a great job that we have individuals who are out there helping us spread the word and checking in, making sure, okay, you said you were going to stop Coke. How many have you had?
Coca-Cola, folks.
Yeah.
Coca-Cola. Yeah,
let's
stipulate.
It's like there's a different facility for the other one.
But a physical activity as simple as walking, something that our American society has taken for granted, because when we're infants, when we're toddlers, we get applause for taking our first steps. After that,
we've come a long way.
On your own.
You're gonna have to be your own cheerleader.
But you could play Applause by Lady Gaga every time you walk.
Just have it on standby. But just the term exercise, going back to one of our earlier discussion topics of physical activity being a method that you can use as a tool to help manage your chronic health conditions. As simple and as boring, like you mentioned earlier, as boring as walking is, walking on a consistent basis, whether it's going to your mailbox and back, whether it's going to the end of your street and back, whether it's parking a little farther away in a parking lot to walk a little further, going in and out of a store.
Taking the stairs.
No, just adding as bland and as boring as it sounds, adding even one extra step or two extra steps or five extra steps adds up throughout your day. So adding those extra steps doesn't seem like it makes a big difference, but it actually does, not just on that specific day, but when you compound that over a month's time, over 3 months' time, 6 months' time, you're actually doing your body a benefit by taking that one extra step day after day after day after day after day. But exercise, the reason I bring up exercise is that you don't have to go to a gym to exercise. One of our other elements of free services at the Center for Healthy Living are some of the free physical activity sessions that we provide, where you don't have to lift weights. Heavy weights. You don't have to be a bodybuilder. You don't have to be a gymnast.
CrossFitter.
Now, if that's you, if that suits you, if that's your personality profile, then go for it. But we also want to shift the mindset that gardening is physical activity.
Dancing.
Dancing. Playing with your kids or grandkids is physical activity. Cooking is physical activity. Like there are already elements of, so not to get too public health scientific, but there's an acronym. It's NEAT. It's non-exercise activity thermogenesis. Y'all don't quote me on that. I think that's what each letter stands for. But it basically means doing physical activity that burns calories throughout your normal day-to-day activities. It's not defined as exercise. Thomas is fact-checking me on the computer, y'all. Did I get it? All right.
10 points for Terrence.
That's that college education coming in handy. Thank you, UT Tyler. Go Patriots. But what are some of the other physical activity sessions that we currently have and that we have had in previous years, Joey? Because we've had a pretty good array of free exercise sessions that we offer to the public.
Yeah, we have. So Zumba was one that we rolled out. But I think before Zumba, we had the walking club where people would meet at the center and we'd do about a mile or so and walk together. And that was fun. And then we did Zumba, We offer Tai Chi, and that was offered virtually during the pandemic, which we shall not talk about. And now we're...
the situation that shall not be mentioned.
That dark event. And now we are doing Trap Yoga, which stands for Trauma, Release, and Peace. And that is a beginner-friendly yoga session, and it's fun. It's fun because you have different types of music. It's all-inclusive, and it's good for anybody in any walks of life. My mom did it. Was she a huge fan? No, but that brings me to a point you talked about, exercise. Exercise gets a bad rap. I love it. I love exercising. I love how it makes me feel. But some people, they can't stand even the thought of the word exercise. Yeah, like that, you
know. Just seeing a word with an X in it.
Like, exactly. Ah. Yeah, X that out. But it could really be anything. We encourage people to try different things. Tai Chi may be great for some people. It may not be great for everybody. So don't rule something out because it's not your thing. I tried CrossFit. That was not my thing. What is my thing is just working out, honestly, in my living room on YouTube. YouTube has free workout sessions, and I have weights, and I get great workout in. So try something that you love. Maybe that could be Pilates. The wonderful thing about it is that there is a whole plethora of different exercises or physical activity that someone can try. And you mentioned gardening.
They can be tailored as well.
It can be tailored,
Something that may be necessarily easy for one person, just by changing a few, movements in your body, you can make it a lot more difficult, So it's like there's a wide variety of there's an infinite amount of things.
Infinite. Mm-hmm. I tell people that you want to look for two types. Well, actually, there's many, but you want to find one that helps build your strength, whatever that is. It could be lifting bags of cans in your kitchen, something that can help strengthen your muscles, that will protect your bones and just make you overall stronger. And then you want to focus on something to get your heart rate up. And I mean, my son and I did Just Dance, like one of the older versions. And man, like my heart rate got up. Even something like that, line dancing is fun. Like whatever it is that you can do that gets your heart rate up for about 20, 30 minutes, do that. And then other things like, the reason why we brought Tai Chi in is because it's good with flexibility. It's good with balance. As we age, we lose our balance. What is something that they ask you when you go to the doctor? Have you fallen in the last blah, blah, blah days?
Yeah.
Because when you get older, it becomes an issue. It's an issue now with me.
Mm-hmm. And even the strength of your thigh muscles. I've read some studies because of when you lose not just your mobility, but when you lose your leg strength, it can affect the overall quality of your future life because you're not able to go out in public and socialize and be in congregate settings, whether it's with your family or with your friends, you independently going grocery shopping, going to the movies, just being independent because of not having that strength in your leg muscles. Also not having that strength in your heart, not having the cardiovascular endurance that you had in your younger years. And whatever type of exercise fits your personality, that is the type that you should adopt. And I even see it as a good thing of trying a new exercise. I try trap yoga. I am not a yoga person, y'all. I've done yoga over the years, but trap yoga was hard for me because you learn what strengths you have and you learn what limitations you have. I'll say what you don't have, but there are some joints. I don't have flexible ankles. That's one thing I learned.
Your body doesn't move a certain way.
Yeah, I try to get in position and it's like one of those social media videos. There's this lady that says, who said we're doing that today? I didn't say we were doing this. Like, it's trying to get in the position and my body said, who said we were doing this position today, Terrence? I just relax. let me get into the spirit of the movement. And it's like, no, it's like my muscles locked up to make sure I wasn't going to try to go into that position. Like it was self-preservation.
He said the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak.
Yeah, the flesh is weak. No, the flesh was strong because I couldn't get in that position. But trying a new exercise that you haven't tried before, just to see, because you may think that you don't like it, but then you actually try it.
I'm all for advocating getting uncomfortable. I think sometimes that comfortability hinders us more than it benefits us a lot, you know. In that sedentary lifestyle we're talking about, me and Terrence, he stands more than I do. We at standing desks, and I will admit that he stands more than I do. But, you know, living that sedentary lifestyle, I mean, you'll get stuck there. You sit down long enough, it'll slowly start to take its toll on your body. I noticed that even my 5 years here with NetHealth, the majority of the jobs that I had, you know, through high school, in college, I was up moving around all the time. And then I got an office job, and then COVID hit. Mm-hmm. And then we were just in the office all the time. And I was sitting at my desk a lot, and I was like, oh man, I'm starting to see it, and I'm starting to feel it sitting down at this desk all day. It'll kill you.
And the struggle is real.
Yeah, it'll kill you. And it may not happen overnight, but you gotta stay moving and stay active, even if that means getting a little uncomfortable. So I advocate for doing things that make you uncomfortable.
Yeah, same. And I advocate for people trying new things. You don't know what you will or won't like unless you try it. Mm-hmm. Even though you may have this preconceived notion of what it is, just be open to finding something that you may fall in love with. And I like to say now, I exercise to garden. Because filling those raised beds was no joke. And I was like, and you know, that's another thing. People like, oh, how does exercise help? Well, it gives me strength. Mm-hmm. It really does. I can tell in my mobility, being able to even get up off the floor. I would encourage our listeners to just get on the floor, like lay flat, and see how long you can get up and how you get up. And that will kind of give you a glimpse into your mobility. And it can be humbling, especially when you see, you know, these young whippersnappers and they're just jumping up real quick.
And you just kip up from laying flat versus whether you have to roll to your right side or left side to get up, whether you need to brace with your elbow or with your knee. Or I know there's a trend now where you see if you can – you sit on the ground and see if you can get off the ground to stand up without using your
touching,
hands.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. I cannot do it.
I can, but I gotta use my knees. I gotta roll to position myself. And there's some that can sit. You can sit crisscross applesauce,
oh, no.
And people can stand straight up. Yeah, I'm not that flexible. I can't do that. That's not me. Can you, Thomas?
I just levitate. Oh,
you're quiet over there.
I just levitate off the ground. Just levitate. I don't need my legs. I don't need my arms or nothing. I'm advanced. No. I don't know. I'm going to try that tonight. I'll definitely try that tonight at the gym. I'll give it a go.
It will humble you.
I'll do a quick little video and I'll send it to both of you guys.
Yeah, that'll be good.
And try to stand up in more than one way. I guess what I'm getting at. Whether you, I don't know if you can go from sitting on your bottom and feet and. Now, I can roll on my back and roll up to stand up, mm-hmm. but just going from a stationary sitting position to
almost
stand
like
up.
A V up, like your like legs come up and then use your leg momentum to rock your body kind of up and then
mm-hmm. and
yeah,
then
like
stand
a V
up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. Versus just sitting like you're sitting watching TV
mm-hmm.
and then to stand up to get to a standing position.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, I used to be able to do the from the back, kind of like the. You know,
the jump up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And like I could do flag holds, you know, flagpole holds and stuff. I probably couldn't hold a flagpole position like I used to. Maybe a second or two. And then I'd collapse. Yeah.
But, you know, so doing exercise, you know, it helps with our daily life. You know, so I think my daughter, she was like, she asked me, what are your goals? Because her goal is to have some, you know, killer arms. That's her goal. And so I was like, my goal is just to live life as easy as possible, mobility-wise. Being able to, like, pick up, carry all my groceries in one sitting because
one arm, both arms, it's like I'm just
strong like that, you know? I just got this.
We spoke about this the other day of like how that shifts, you know, from something from
looks.
Not like vanity. It'd be like, you know, I want to have a physically fit looking body versus like I just want to be able to use this thing. You know? Like
and use it for a long time.
Yeah. It's like it's amazing trajectory wise how that shifts over the course of our you know, our age.
That is interesting. You know? I think for me, maybe when I turned 40.
Yeah.
Because I did have my days where I wanted, you know, I wanted to look good.
Yeah.
So.
It's like, now I just want to get out of the chair without groaning.
Now I just
want to
feel good.
I just want to wake up and not have anything feel stiff or sore.
Cracking and popping, getting out of bed.
Like you think more about your joint health.
Yeah.
More than you do about your muscular health. More about the vanity aspect of.
And mobility training is just. Crucial.
I told Terrence, I just turned 31 in June, but used to.
You hear that, Joey? The sound of his good knees and ankles saying that. I'm 31.
but I slowly.
All that synovial fluid moving freely through.
I have ventured into the territory of now I consider heights that I jump off of. You know, used to it was like I jump off of anything. You know, I'll jump in and out of the bed of my truck. Jumping over gates and things like that. And now it's like sometimes I find myself pondering just a little bit longer than I used to. I mean, I'll still do it.
The cost analysis.
Yeah, I'll still do it. Is it worth it? I'm like, you know, if I catch my foot just right on that, it's a pretty long way down. Or if I, you know, if I underestimate this and I fumble it, you know, I might end up in the hospital. It's just funny how that's progressed over the years because used to is just like, I got this. Go for it. We'll see.
And that kind of thinking is why it's hard to get younger people in our doors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, diabetes, like we said, it doesn't have a preference on income. It doesn't have a preference on age anymore.
Doesn't discriminate.
We're seeing people younger and younger that have it.
Yeah. All that soda pop, you know, all that. There's sugar in everything. Your ketchup. You know, it's like you can't go in and pick anything off the shelf without added sugars in it.
Right.
It's pretty sad. But yeah, that I think that notion of kind of like I'm young and invincible. And it's like, well, give it a little time. Young whippersnapper.
Young whippersnappers. Or, you know, they have this thought that, oh, well, everybody in my family has it. We saw this a lot at the reunion, family reunion. Everyone in my family has it. It's only a matter of time before I get it, and they seem to be doing okay, so I'll be okay. And there's education there.
Yeah, that's a scary mindset to have.
That
for sure.
Yes, and that's where it's like, okay, you need to come to our class, even not to put fear in you, but just okay. Are they doing okay though?
Shoot, I'd say yeah.
Are they? Let me see their medication list.
Put the fear of the Lord in them, man. Be like. You know, that's, you know, all those, you know, smoking cessation PSAs, you know, with the hole in the throat and those things. And now in some countries, you know, they actually put the picture of the lungs and stuff on the, you know, it's like that might not be the reason that they continue to, but maybe it spurs something in them, you know.
For some individuals, it does. Seeing
the
actual cost of medications that a family member has to.
That's scary.
Has to pay, and you realize, oh, well, they're paying that much per month. I don't really want to go down that route. Like it's, I mean, it goes back to the prevention. That if you want to avoid that situation, then you got to do some of the work to keep yourself from getting into that type of situation. If you can prevent it, let me say that.
I was telling my mom because I hurt my back recently gardening. And you know that having worked out for so long and being able to do pretty much, you know, got to a point where I can do whatever easily, it was hard to revert back to feeling old and dilapidated. Mm-hmm. But I was telling her, you know, they can't get me in for physical therapy until the middle of September. You know, if I was really bad off, that would be horrible. And so I think that while we do have a great healthcare system, you know, we really need to get to the point where we have to say, I got to invest in myself. I don't need to rely on what we have. We do have a lot of resources, but it still requires us to be able to put, to invest in us. I mean, what are some things I can do until September? Well, there's a ton of free YouTube videos on stretches. What can you do that would help your overall health? Whether it's, some people ask, could I get off medication eventually? The answer is yes. You absolutely could. You could get off a few medication, but don't rely on health care to be your only source of health.
I think that's a really good point. You know, taking stake in your own health and capital in your own health. I 100%, 1,000% agree with that. I think too many people rely on things outside of themselves in many ways. But yeah, man, that's a really good point. Yeah, taking stake in your own health. Yeah.
So earlier, Joy, you had mentioned one of your daughters, what her one of her long term goals were, and then one of your long term goals for yourself. What do you see as a long term goal in the evolution of the Center for Healthy Living? The center. I got to catch myself. Don't get lazy with my speech. How do you see the Center for Healthy Living evolving its impact? We've been open for 11 years now. So what about the next 11 years?
I hope that it really becomes a source for the community when they get diabetes or when they are told they have high blood pressure or any type of chronic disease. We should be one of the first ones that they think about. Oh, let me see what the center has for me. Or having it be this place where people can come, feel welcomed, all walks of life. We do not discriminate. We welcome anyone. And to be able to walk in and sit down with somebody and really understand what it means to have hypertension, high blood pressure. What does it mean to have diabetes? I have a mom who won't go and get a mammogram. What can I do? I'm hoping that we'll be that resource that people think about. And, you know, my, I guess, short-term goal is I want to have a community garden. I told Terrence, you know, we wrote some grants to try to get it. But regardless, I told him it will happen. It will happen one way or another. Because we talked about food being so important for our overall health. I mean, you know that saying, you are what you eat. In a lot of ways, we are. And even with, I've seen it just with my family. You know, my son, I'm growing squash. And he has got to see how it came from seed to now there's actually a little squash growing. And he was so psyched. He was like, oh my goodness. When children get to see how their food is made, where it comes from, and they have a stake in that, all of a sudden, they're going to try that. And I'm hoping that we can show this coming generation exactly where our food does come from and alternatives to the fast food life and the instant gratification, mm-hmm. you know, that we're so used to getting. Good food takes time to grow and make, but it makes it that much better. Being able to sit down with our family and, you know, have that fellowship along with some good food, like it does not get any better than that. And we knew that good food is going to help us overall. And so that's what I'm hoping. We get families involved and, you know, just having that name recognition and immediately think, I need to go to the center because they have classes. They have physical activity options. They have a garden. They can help me. That's my goal.
So the gardening theme, that makes me think back to what we talked about earlier. Just the simple act of having enough physical mobility to kneel or squat or bend down to harvest.
To pick your potatoes.
To plant seeds.
So you dig like potatoes? Those, Sam is a gardening expert now.
That's true.
I've been gardening for like a month, yeah. So I know these things.
you got this glow now. This
you know, it's
kind of a green
myself,
garden aura.
Why did it take me so long? Because my mom is an excellent gardener. And my sister is
now
wonderful.
You're like, I've been missing out on all this.
This time, I really thought I couldn't garden. Because I could barely keep houseplants alive.
Let me see your thumb. Is it turning green yet?
No, not yet. But then somebody said, you're not born with a green thumb. Mm-hmm. It develops.
Yeah.
And what am I good at? I'm good at research. I'm good at getting information. And so I decided to try. And, you know, it's a battle. Because mm-hmm. like every pest in the neighborhood knows I got some goods. Let's go over there now.
They can sense new plants sprouting up. Like the guy hiding behind the tree rubbing his hands.
I think that's probably the wife's probably most excited. We were talking before the episode started, for anybody listening. We'll be homeowners soon, and the wife's super excited about getting her garden and everything going. Because we rent right now. We have I made her a box. It's a standing box. It's a 3-tier standing box. And she has her little garden on the patio, but she's excited to be able to expand and make a full-fledged
garden. Soon as y'all move in, she's going to have this garden layout, a multi-page.
She's been working on it. She's been like plotting it, and I'm going to have to probably get a tiller and, you know, cut out a spot in the back. And
you will have a role, whether it's building raised beds or getting your pickup full of soil.
Well, I got the truck for it, mm-hmm. so she's excited about it.
But that, you know, so I want to bring that to this younger generation. Mm-hmm. There, you know, our ancestors and even our grandparents, you know, they'd garden. A lot of times they had to.
Sure.
That was their source of food. They could afford food,
mm-hmm. Hey, nowadays it pays a little bit to grow some of your own stuff. Everything's so freaking
it's an investment.
Expensive.
I would not tell someone to garden to save money. I would not say that. Although there's a lot of ways you can garden on a budget, but I would say garden because it's better for you. You know, when you cook a homemade meal, you know exactly what was put into that meal. When we go eat out, we think we know, but we don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it is with gardening. You know exactly what you put into that. Mm-hmm. And it tastes so much better. And you learn to eat seasonally. Like, I had no idea that lettuce thrived in cold weather. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be eating salads in the winter. You know, you always associate it with, like, summer and all that. No.
Yeah.
It's a shift.
I know they did say that, like, after, like, say you start a garden, it maybe takes, like, 2 to 3 years for it to actually really produce because that soil takes time to, I guess, establish all the nutrients and everything. And there is like a delayed time before it actually becomes cost effective, you know, mm-hmm. after like your first, second, third harvest. And then it'll start to produce more. And then that's where like you actually start to see
that's when you hit gold.
The savings, mm-hmm. yeah.
Well, I'm, you know, I don't want to wait that long.
Instant gratification, like we're talking with.
Yeah,
I ain't got no 3 years.
Yeah.
No, I know what you mean, and so you know, my expectations is low, but you know, hey, if I have enough to make some salsa, I'm gonna enjoy that salsa.
What kind of stuff do you have in your garden right now?
I have tomatoes and peppers and pumpkins and squash and cucumbers and melons. But I've started seeds for the fall garden.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
You going to be making any pumpkin spice lattes on that?
No, but I will be making pumpkin bread.
Nice.
Yes.
I'm going to have to take you up on that.
Yeah.
To put it in order.
And there are other unrealized benefits of gardening at home or being involved with a community garden, because you kind of alluded to this, Joy. You anticipate what's going to grow. And you also do – it's also – there's some brain health to this because you start to plan what you want to grow next.
Oh, I have a whole spreadsheet. Multiple layers.
Even into next calendar year? Like you've already...
I'm booked through summer 2025.
Oh, you're booked? The seeds have to make appointments now?
My garden beds are booked.
You got to... Airbnb for the seas now.
But it also, you know, I'm not a social person. And it has helped me branch out. I mean, my mom was laughing at me. I was going around asking neighbors for like, hey, you got any cardboard boxes? You got it using those limbs right there that you just cut? Can I have them? I mean, I got out and talked to people. I'm involved in groups now. And that's a benefit that I never would have thought gardening could help with your social life. Mm-hmm. But it has. And also, for families who garden, there's a level of food security that comes with that. And we live in an area, Smith County has really high food insecurity rates. And it's tragic. And so part of my goal for bringing a community garden is to address those rates, but to get people involved, have that social aspect. You know, in our neighborhood, most of the time, the people who would say, I didn't know what you guys did, are people that live right next to the center.
Mm-hmm.
Getting them involved. We've lacked that community in a lot of ways, and especially with COVID.
Mm-hmm.
We're more isolated than ever. There's multiple reasons why a community garden is great, but I don't want to just talk about that. But I think that's a goal that I would love to have. I think it would be very beneficial.
Well, in the event that goal comes to fruition, we can have you back on and you can tell us about all the success that you're having with the garden.
Yes.
At the center.
Yes.
So this is literally just touching the surface of all the free preventive health services that are available at the Center for Healthy Living. That street address again, everybody, is 2815 Frankston Highway. One of the ways I traditionally tell people, it's 155 South and Walton Road in Southwest Tyler, inside the Loop. So whatever landmark you want to use to associate that, it's across the street from Lupita's restaurant. It is down the street from the Tyler ISD administrative offices.
Down the street from Walmart. You know, when the center opened, we didn't have Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
That's new.
It's up the street from St. Louis Baptist Church.
Can't miss it. Looks like a fire station.
Yeah, you literally can't miss. if you're on 155 South, you're driving into Tyler, you stop at that first traffic light. After you've passed by the Loop, you drive about a mile or so, and you stop at a traffic light. Just look to your left, and you'll see the Center for Healthy Living. Or if you're in Tyler, leaving down Vine Street, going past that Tyler ISD office, Walmart, you go over that hill a little bit, stop at that traffic light, look over to the right, you'll see the Center for Healthy Living. You can physically walk in to talk to Joy or Brittany or Viviana or Taisha or Inadina. You can call our Center for Healthy Living to get assistance with any service. That number again, 903-593-7474. You can Google us. You can search us online. Our website address is mynethealth.org. We're on Facebook and Instagram and YouTube.
Yeah. I'll be sure, as always, to put any of these resources in the show notes. Y'all can definitely look under there, and you'll be able to get access to the center's information. And Joy.
Perfect. And me.
But on a serious ending note, to everybody listening, you are in control of your own health. If you need assistance in controlling your own health, please contact the Center for Healthy Living. We are a free community resource that is designed to help anybody to stay healthy. Don't know how else I could sum that up.
No, I think that was great. Joy, we appreciate you having her. We appreciate you coming in and enlightening us to everything that's going on at the center.
Yeah. Before we end, I just want to ask you guys a question of why you're in public health.
Hmm.
I think that's a question that we need to ask ourselves pretty often.
Sure.
Oh. Make sure that we're focused in. So, Terrence.
22 more years and my house is paid off.
He's like, no, he's like, I'm cashing a check every month.
I have personally struggled with my own health ever since I've been a kid. My childhood nickname was Baby Fat because I was a fat baby. Like, it just stuck. You know, family members give you a nickname and you can't undo that nickname. As I've gotten even middle school age, high school age, I would be overweight and then I'd be quote unquote healthy weight and then I'd be overweight again. Then I'd get back down to a good weight and I've yo-yoed all throughout my life. Right now I'm in a season where I'm relatively healthier than I had been even since earlier this year. And I know other individuals go through that same thought process that I go through. Even guys in their 40s, 50s, like you mentioned this earlier, you're not invincible. We're all human. We have our faults. We have our limitations. But there are support systems in place that can help you be a more well-rounded individual, whether that's physically getting in shape, whether that's mentally being more stable and comfortable with yourself, whether that's being more emotionally content with your current life situation. Like, everybody comes and goes through different seasons, and being a public health employee, I'm able to help people on a daily basis with whatever type of situation they may be going through, because it may be somebody that needs to be signed up for health insurance. And then I may get an email or phone call from somebody 5 minutes later that's wanting to learn how to get vaccines for themselves or for their family. And then later that day, there's another individual wanting, I want to get a colonoscopy. Can you help? And then somebody may call because they smell sewage around their property. And then somebody else may, I'm just going down the laundry list of different personal interactions that I have had over these last 12 years, 3 months, 6 days. Literally being a public servant is why I'm in public health. When I wake up, I literally don't know how I'm going to. I know I'm going to help somebody that day. I don't know who I'm going to help. I don't know how I'm going to help them, but I know that I'm in a position in our community wellness department. I'm in a position to be of service to somebody else that needs a public health product.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting to emote like that, Joy. Put the question out.
It's good. It's a good reminder. Mm-hmm. It's a good reminder to be reminded every day of, I guess, what we're doing. I think that's a great answer, Terrence. As for myself, as Terrence and Joy both know, I started as a program assistant with NetHealth. First episode, if you want to know a little bit kind of more about me and Terrence's background, you can go to the first episode where we introduced kind of the theme and everything for casting the net. But I was an exercise sports science major. Public health was definitely not necessarily on my radar when I went to college. I was a powerlifter, cross-country runner, track, football, played a lot of sports in high school. But I initially was going to go to college for occupational therapy. But after realizing how competitive Texas State was, being an accredited location for occupational therapy, working full-time job, I had the by God's grace, I had the even the foresight then to be like, nah, I'm probably not going to be able to cut it. So I hopped into exercise sports science as my major, and wasn't necessarily like preventative medicine or anything like that, but got my degree in health and wellness promotion. And by God's sovereignty, I made my way to East Texas after graduating, internship with NetHealth. But then I realized shortly after maybe a year of being in public health here with the Northeast Texas Public Health District that being bilingual and being from a Hispanic background and my ability to resonate with individuals that when I was younger, my mother came to me a lot to have those conversations on her behalf, her being limited in her ability to express her ideas when it came to her health or setting up appointments. I was often doing that on her behalf, and I realized how much of a need that is and how much hesitancy there is within the Hispanic community of people seeking help because they feel like, well, I don't know who to talk to. I don't know if they're going to have somebody that, you know, can understand me. So they're just like, I'm not making that call at all. And I realized how the Lord could use me in that capacity and how much it's still very much needed, you know. Thankfully, we do have, I feel like public health and just a lot of companies in general have stepped up to have multiple, you know, whether it's pamphlets or infographics in multiple languages and things to make it a little bit more accessible to some of these other communities of individuals. But yeah, coming to work every day knowing, like you said, Terrence, that there are people that need PIOs, public information officers, to help some of these people navigate through some of these things. We have a wide, you know, net health as a whole. We reiterate this a lot on the episode that we have a variety of resources that we provide to the community, and not only here in Tyler, but East Texas in general. And people need help navigating all that. It's a lot. You know, we have a hard time even trying to condense this into an episode because we can kind of go down so many different rabbit holes. I know that I play a role and I know that I have a capacity and I have to be able to use that capacity that the Lord's given me. The fact that I do speak Spanish and whatever gifts he's given me to use those every day to the best of my ability. So thank you, Joy, for reminding me of that.
Thank you both for sharing.
Yeah, it is. It is definitely something that we need to be reminded every day that people are counting on us. I guess even if they don't know that they're counting on us to be able to do our jobs effectively, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we're here to help. We're happy to help. We're happy to continue to prevent, promote, and protect.
And we're happy we had Joy Johnson as our guest today.
Very much so.
Wife, mother,
it's been great.
Education specialist, community health worker, gardener.
Mm-hmm. Now, new chicken mom.
Yeah, new chick mom.
Yes, it's been a pleasure being here.
Yeah. Well, thanks again, Joy. And I guess that concludes this episode. So, y'all stay tuned. Peace.
Till next time.
Bye.